Did you know that distance and physical barriers, especially common in larger or multi-story homes, can reduce the strength of your Wi-Fi signal and slow down your internet? For setup tips on how to get the best out of your NBN connection, visit nbn.com.au/checkyoursetup.
You're listening to SBS News.
Australians who use the National Disability Insurance Scheme are facing an anxious wait with political gridlock in Canberra. The federal government, Greens and Coalition have been considering post-budget measures on tax and the NDIS, and there's just one sitting fortnight remaining before Parliament rises for a five-week winter break. As negotiations continue, T. Mitchell spoke with Dr. Sam Bennett, the Disability Program Director at the Grattan Institute. Dr. Bennett starts by addressing the elephant in the room, which is what might happen if the proposed changes don't make it through the Parliament.
Well, it's going to have a very significant impact. As you said, I think, you know, whilst there's been a lot of focus on other aspects of the most recent federal budget, the tax reform elements in particular, perhaps, there's a strong argument that the NDIS savings in that budget are the single biggest component of it. As you said, more than $37 billion, I think it is. It's more than a third of the overall savings in the budget. And obviously, if those savings don't materialise over the forward estimates as is expected, then that will have a significant knock-on impact in terms of the structural budget deficit and the budget repair that government is trying to undertake.
And we're now poised at this position politically where there's talk about the Coalition and the Greens sort of teaming up to extend some of the Senate inquiries going on into the tax reforms, but also the NDIS reforms. And I guess the point there is that it's not clear that the government's legislation on the NDIS will pass as is, and there's certainly deep concern among the disability community. In your submission to that Senate inquiry on the NDIS reforms, you talked about blunt, short-term cuts over the next 4 years. Can you explain what you were saying there?
Absolutely. So, look, I should start by saying I think there's also a lot of good stuff in the package here that is attempting to fix real and long-standing structural problems with the NDIS. And I would include eligibility, the way the market operates, and building up supports outside the scheme amongst that. But you're right that there are some other shorter-term measures in the package that I have much more concerns about. And particularly, as you said, some pretty blunt cuts that are planned to social and community participation and capacity building budgets. And that cut will be of 50% and 10% respectively of those budgets applied to all participants. And that's about $13.2 billion that comes from those cuts that over a third of the total NDIS savings in the package. And it'll actually be those measures that are responsible for most of the savings that we see in the next 1 to 2 years. And that's because some of those other measures, those ones that are really fixing big structural problems with the NDIS, are going to take longer to design and to implement. And to enable that cut that I've just described to happen, the bill that's with the Senate at the moment would give the minister, or indeed any future minister, essentially a power to arbitrarily reduce funding for whole groups of support at any time they deem it necessary for the scheme's financial sustainability. So the focus at the moment might be on those social and community participation budgets, but it could be anything within the scheme really in future. And that allows a minister to reduce supports for people within the NDIS without showing that their needs have changed, that their plans have been wrongly calculated, or that the supports that they're receiving are poor value in their particular circumstances. And I have concerns not just about the extent of that power, but also about its proposed use, because the social and community participation cuts that are planned, the rationale really, I think, is that those supports are less important than supports that address basic physical health and safety, things like toileting, showering, meal preparation, in-home care, for example. But that really is too narrow a view of disability support, and it isn't, you know, what the NDIS was supposed to do. The social and community participation was central to the vision for the scheme. Those supports help people with disability to build their independence, to form and keep relationships, to engage in their local communities, really. So disabled people have, already significant disadvantages in that area, and social connections are a major driver of health and well-being. So, that there are elevated risks associated with this in terms of isolation and loneliness and safety for people. And worse still, the cuts could fall, most on the most vulnerable people on the NDIS. So people with some of the highest needs on the scheme, perhaps understandably, have got average budgets for social and community participation that are more than five times higher than other people in the NDIS. So when these cuts come in, they could lose five times as much support as some other people. And it'll hit certain groups more so than others, because these kinds of supports, they make up about a quarter of average plans for people with a visual impairment, for people with a psychosocial disability or Down syndrome or intellectual disability. So, yeah, I've got concerns about this aspect of the bill in particular. As I said, I think there's some changes in there that are long overdue that need to occur and are important because they're fixing real structural problems with the NDIS. But then in parallel with that, you've got these short-term cuts. And in our submission, we made the argument that it's not necessary to implement those cuts to put the NDIS on a sustainable footing, which is the government's stated purpose over the medium term, to get the scheme down to between 5 and 6% growth, which I think is a reasonable aspiration to have if you compare that to the growth rates within sort of more mature programs like Medicare and aged care payments. But these cuts actually see the scheme slashed to growth rates of 1.1% over the forward estimates, so over the next 4 years. That amounts to a real terms cut because it's significantly below inflation. So it takes us beyond growth moderation to real terms cuts, really, what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and as I understand it, a lot of the sort of shorter term cost savings will come from foundational supports to be provided by the states, and they're meant to begin alongside the new assessment methodology from January 2028. What would need to happen in order for states and territories to be able to provide adequate supports to participants who are going to be moved off the scheme?
Well, look, again, I think this is a really important part of the package. People may be aware that really states used to provide disability supports prior to the NDIS. All of their money effectively was rolled into the NDIS when that commenced from 2013. All of those other non-NDIS supports have fallen away. It's a slightly different picture in one state and territory to another. But one of the impacts of that is it's created real pressure on the NDIS to be all things to all people, because there, in most places, just isn't anything else. So building up those supports outside the NDIS, perhaps lower levels of support that can meet people's needs more efficiently and effectively than the NDIS has been able to, is the right idea. It's the right thing to do. Government made a commitment a couple of years ago after the independent review of the NDIS to $10 billion over 5 years. That was 50% federal government, 50% states and territories to fund these foundational supports, which was the name that the NDIS review gave to these services. It's taken 2.5 years since then for the government to negotiate and agree on the scope of Thriving Kids, which is the program that will commence from October to provide supports for children under the age of 9 with developmental delay and disability. But we have a further $6 billion as yet unallocated, which we don't yet have any information about who the supports will be for, how they'll be designed and implemented. And an awful lot will hinge on that, as you said, because as the eligibility changes come in from January 2028, people will be coming off the program that no longer meet the threshold of getting into the NDIS. I think that's probably right and appropriate, because the number of people on the scheme is much higher than anticipated, and it isn't necessarily the best way to meet all of their needs. But it places a huge onus on states and territories and the federal government getting their skates on to ensure that these services are in place in time for those changes, because people will fall through the gaps if that doesn't happen. So we are going to need to see some real urgency now in negotiating and clarifying what those supports will be. I think there's a big gap out there in providing these kinds of non-NDIS supports for people with a psychosocial disability. That was another highlighted by the NDIS review, but we haven't seen any movement in that area. And there are plenty of other supports as well that will be needed as people start to come off the scheme. So really getting clear about that with some urgency now is going to be important so that people don't miss out on the support.
From what advocates and people with a disability have told me, it's not that there were adequate supports on a state and territory level before the NDIS anyway, which is, I think, part of why the NDIS ended up picking up so much of that demand. Another aspect of these reforms that's been talked about a lot is fraud and integrity. The government sort of framed the reforms to some extent around tackling those issues, but advocates in the Greens as well have suggested that that's been a bit of a Trojan horse for these broader structural reforms that are now happening quite quickly. Looking at the legislation we now have, how central are the issues of fraud and integrity to these reforms and to the savings derived from them?
Yeah, look, it's really important for people to understand this. I think it's true to say that fraud and rorts have been really quite central to the government's narrative around the necessity for reform. And there is a real problem here that does need fixing. It's really important the fraud and integrity measures that are enabled by this legislation. I think the changes all seem pretty sensible and necessary to administer the scheme in a way that we ensure that every dollar that's allocated, every dollar of public money that the NDIS spends gets to the people it was intended for the purpose it was intended. But I think it is also really important to know that whilst these measures are important, it doesn't really amount to a hill of beans in terms of the cost trajectory, because fraud is not the reason the NDIS is unsustainable. The reason the NDIS is unsustainable is some of those other big structural problems that some facets of the current legislation seek to fix. And if you look just at the government's own numbers in terms of which of the various measures contribute to the savings that are projected, the savings that come down to fraud are really only about 2% of the package. So really, whilst it's a big part of the narrative, it's a relatively small part of the picture as it relates to getting the NDIS on a sustainable footing for the future. So it's important, but it isn't a major contributor to savings.
So those are a few of the key areas in terms of the reforms and the legislation the government's brought forward. Are there any other components that you'd point to as being particularly significant and worth having a chat about?
Well, I think one of the other things that the legislation enables is direct commissioning from the government of some services. So the NDIS up to now, it's been an entirely market-based model. So people might be familiar with this. The individual has funding put in their plan, and then they shop around in the marketplace to find the supports that they need that make sense to them day to day. And for some people, that works really well. For others, far less so. I think in some of our research, we've looked at early intervention and supports for sort of young children and families with perhaps a developmental sort of delay or disability, and found that a model that, you know, provides you with a bucket of money and asks you to navigate a complex marketplace, often under pressure from providers that are incentivized to just deliver more and more therapy rather than necessarily getting a really good early intervention result, has not been the best design. And similarly, you could say that about some other parts of the NDIS as well. So what the government is introducing levers in the legislation to do is to do a bit more than just setting the price, but also where it makes sense to buy some services directly so that they can get some real value, some economies of scale, and potentially shift you know, the market in the direction that they want to see. And they've highlighted a number of areas within the NDIS as perhaps the priorities for that. support coordination and plan management. These are sort of intermediary supports, if you like, that help people to navigate the marketplace. It's more than $1 billion of the current NDIS spend. Lots of issues have been identified over various reviews with that part of the scheme. I think it's reasonable to assume that government can get a more effective and efficient service by commissioning it directly in that part of the NDIS. Another area that was identified was supported independent living. That's intensive in-home supports for people with some of the most significant needs on the NDIS. Now, Grattan's done work in this area as well. It's a really important part of the NDIS. It's only 5% of participants, but about a third of the overall costs. And we know we're not getting great results in that part of the scheme, despite the price tag. The NDIS was supposed to be transformative for this group, but way too many people have seen no change at all. Most people are still in the same group homes that they were in before the scheme was introduced. So again, I think there's a good reason to tackle this one by some more direct intervention in the market, but it will need to be done really carefully and deliberately with a clear objective to try and shift the market and to deliver more independent living options for people so that they can live ordinary lives in the community rather than just being used as a way of propping up some of the larger providers that provide these group home supports at the moment. It needs to be used as a means of driving improvement, innovation, transformation in the NDIS rather than just dealing with an issue of provider vacancies in this part of the program.
These are all really wide-ranging and complex reforms, and there's several areas where, you know, things might not go perfectly in the first instance. Is there any mechanism for review once the legislation does pass through the Senate, assuming it does? Is there any provision for the government to have a look down the track and make an assessment of whether it could be improved again in a more incremental way?
Well, I think one of the things you can't accuse the government of doing over the last 10 years is being shy of reviewing the scheme. That's happened a lot of times. We've had reviews by the Productivity Commission, the Tune review back in 2019, the most recent independent review back in 2023. So there is always that opportunity to do that. But I think it is a good point in respect that this is such a big change that it should actually be built in, I think, that an evaluation of all of these measures, how they're impacting on different groups of people, whether there are any unintended consequences that result from these changes, how well the government is doing in delivering these changes in the right sequence so that people don't miss out and fall through the gaps. I think it should be something that has a time frame set around and perhaps a cyclical every 12, 18 months evaluation of what the impact of these measures have been, and that coming back before Parliament would make good sense.
Just finally, this is all happening quite quickly. Would you support a longer Senate inquiry at this point just to make sure that this sort of overarching or this overhaul gets the balance right?
Look, I think it's really important that a bill passes so that the government can get on with the really important work of structural repair on the NDIS and start to deliver some of those important savings into the federal budget that we've already talked about. So I think a bill does need to pass. I completely understand the concerns about the time frame here. It has been very tight. The Senate inquiry was only commissioned in mid-May. It reports on the 16th of June. So I think there is a case for extending it, but I wouldn't want to see it extended too far. It needs to be built into the whole design and implementation of the package after it passes that there are many more opportunities for consultation and engagement, because whilst the bill provides the legislative enablement for this whole package, a lot of the detail is still to be determined about how some of these changes need to be implemented. So I think, yes, there's a case for extension. No, it shouldn't be for too long. It's too important for this to be delayed. And then we really need to ensure that government is thinking about the best mechanisms to involve people in the process of design and implementation thereafter.